Jeez, we just discussed how the height of a sukkah and how it relates to the height of the aron, right? The shlina actually never descended all the way to land, therefore the fact that it never descended within 10 tefachim of the ground means that the sukkah cannot be less than 10 tefachim, because that would imply that it's part of the ground and it's not a building. Okay? So it says, Velo yarda shlina lamata. Is it really true that a shlina never descended to the ground? Didn't Hashem descend on Har Sinai? And isn't a mountain, you know, ground? So, lemay lemasar tefachim, the answer was no, he hovered 10 tefachim above Har Sinai. He never actually went all the way down to the ground. V'achsi v'amdu raglav b'yoyim ahul ha-har-zeitim. Doesn't the pasuk say that on that day when the Mashiach comes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's feet will, metaphorically, be on ha-har-zeitim? Right? Doesn't that imply he'll be on the ground? No! Lemaylem asar tefachim, not a problem. He won't really be staying on Har Zeitim. He'll be floating 10 tefachim above where Har Zeitim is.
Cool.
Yeah. Everybody knows where Har Zeitim is, by the way, right? Yeah?
Yes.
You've all seen it? The gigantic cemetery opposite Yerushalayim?
Yes. Juxtaposed to the
old city.
Ugly view of East Jerusalem.
And East Jerusalem's that ugly.
I mean, it's absolutely horrendous.
Okay. Is it really true that Moshe and Eliyahu never Navi didn't really go up into heaven? V'achziv, and didn't we say Moshe Allah El HaElohim? Where does that pasuk appear?
Obvious, probably Yitro.
I'm sorry?
Probably Yitro.
Yes. Okay, right? Lemata me'asara, and he stayed within. I mean, Kosh Baruch was above Asara, and Moshe Rabbeinu was standing below Asara Tvachim. So even though he was, you know, very close to God, he was not actually in, you know, the same spatial area.
So there was 10 gap between them.
Apparently. V'achziv v'yal Eliyahu b'sara shemayim. Didn't it say that Eliyahu ascended to heaven in a storm? So it says, no, lemata me'asara. He stayed 10 tefachim below actual heaven. V'achziv. Me'achaz pnei chisei parshez alav anano. So that's a pasuk in Eov, which means. Basically, he spread out a cloud. He spread out a cloud from his throne. Kadosh Baruch Hu spread out a cloud from his throne, right? V'amar Rabbi Tankon Me'olami. This teaches Shepirish. Shepirish Adai Miziv Shchinasoi V'Anano Alav. So that means that. Just a minute. That teaches us that. Sorry. Oh, that means that that's a way of saying that Moshe Rabbeinu stood within the actual cloud of God, so it implies that he was in spatially the same place as God, right? Lemata me'asara, no, he was still 10 tefachim lower. Mikol makoy me'achaz pnei kisei, but doesn't it say that he grabbed the kisei akavoy? So doesn't that imply he was with Hashem, right? Ishtarbuve ishtarbivle kisei adasara v'nakat lebe. Basically, the throne was floating 10 tefachim above him, but since 10 tefachim is not a high, he was able to reach it and grab it. Okay. So, Bishlama, so let's get back to our original discussion. Bishlama, Aron Tisha Dichsiv, Asur, Aron Eitzim, Aron Atzei Shitim, Amasayim, V'chetzi Arkoi, V'ama, V'chetzi Rechboi, V'ama, V'chetzi Koima, so, I understand how you know that the Aron is 9 tefachim tall without the kaporis. Remember we said the aron is 9 tefachim and the kaporis is another tefach.
Mm-hmm.
The lid that goes on the aron is another tefach, right? Without the, not counting the angels that are on top of it. So, I understand how you know the aron is a kaporis, is a tefach. Why? Because it says it's amah v'chetzi kai maso. It says amah v'chetzi tall, which is 9 tefachim.
Mm-hmm.
El kaporis tefach minalan. But how do you know the kaporis is a tefach? How do you know that's the case? Sandy Rabbi Chinin, a kolakalim shall some Moshe nasna bahantura midas arkana midas rach midas kamasan kaboris midas arka or midas rach ba nasna midas kamasan loy nasna, because we have a brisa that says in the name of Rabbi Chanina all the kalim that Moshe Rabbeinu made from Mishkan, we're told their dimensions, we're told it's width, its length, and its depth. Right, the only one that's not true is the kaboris, where we know its width and length because it had to cover the aron, so you know it's right, I'm a sign b'chetzi arkov, I'm a b'chetzi rachbo. You know, it's 2.5 amas by 1.5 amas, but you don't know its height, but you don't know its depth. So el kaporis, tzeilman mi pachus shebe kelim. So go and look, find the smallest, the least important of the kelim. Shneimar v'asisa lo misgerach misgeres tefach tzavid. There is a halacha that you're meant to make a misgeres, meaning some sort of enclosure around the shulchan. Right, so the shulchan, which is, you know what was done on the shulchan?
Yeah.
What was on the shulchan?
Lechem ha'panim.
Very good. So the 12 loaves of lechem ha'panim. Why is it called lechem ha'panim?
Because they didn't eat. Well, they were there the whole week, and then on Yom Friday, they didn't eat them.
No, it's called lechem ha'panim because it was shaped around like a horseshoe.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so they were like the two ends of the bread faced each other.
Oh, yeah, I've seen pictures.
That's quite cool.
Sorry?
That's quite cool.
Parish Rashi?
Alice, can you make bread like that?
If you have the right mold, why not?
Can you make bread fast like that?
That's facing itself?
Yeah.
Why not?
No, cool. Have you ever eaten bread like that?
I have never eaten bread that has that exact shape.
It'd be pretty impressive.
Okay, fine. So, right, that's the reason. That's so the lechem ponim was on the shulchan, and around the base. So, basically, the Torah describes a series of rods, of golden rods, that were constructed on top of the shulchan, that were designed to basically carry the trays that the lechem ponim was then resting on, right? And there were six loaves on each side of the shulchan, right? And each one was supported by each set of six loaves, was supported by a different set of golden rods. Right, coming up from the corners of the shulchan. So, and then around the actual shulchan itself, the actual table, there was what's called a misgeres. Right, it was some sort of elevated fence almost around the edge of the table. Right? Right? So it says, and that was a tefach. The pasuk says it was a tefach. That was a tefach deep. So ma la la tefach afkan tefach, just as there was a tefach, so here too we're talking about a tefach. Parenthetically, there is a machlokes. Where exactly was the misgeres on the shulchan? So some people thought something. I thought a misgeres was on the top. It was poking above the edge, and some Tanaim thought it was below the edge. There's a kashi in the Bali Tetsu. There's a kashi in the Bali Tetsu asking. In that case, we need to have a halachada because of this misgeres, because of this fence around the edge, of this border around the edge of the table, so the table is mekabel tuma. For many kelim, it has to have, and it has to be able to carry something, it has to be able to take something inside, it has to be able to mekabel tuma. So misgeres makes mekabel tuma. So the Bali Tetsu asks, but wait, if it's upside down, then how is it able to be mekabel tuma?
What do you mean if it's upside down?
If it's upside down and the scarus is facing downwards, it's not on top, it's below, then it can't receive anything.
So that's an afka minute, it's makabal tumo on it.
So then how can it be makabal tumo? It can't actually hold anything.
Oh, so do we know that it's...
We know it's makabal tumo. The Gemara says makabal tumo because of the scarus, right? So the answer that they give, it's that the top of the shulchan was actually detachable. And it could be turned over, and sometimes it even was during the Shalosh Regalim. And for that reason...
Detachable?
Yeah, basically it could be detached from the legs. The top bit, the table bit, that you like put stuff on, was detachable from the legs, and it even was during Shal Shal Golem, and turned over, and therefore you could hold things in it because it would be faced upright sometimes. It would sometimes, Miscaris actually would face upwards.
Ah, okay. That's quite a fancy answer.
Yeah. So, interesting. So, I think it's interesting, at least. Huh? So it says, Vanilla from Keelan McGough Fai Hu. So, the Gemara then suggests, why don't we learn from the Kelim themselves, right? Meaning, why can't you learn from even smaller Kelim? Like, to say that that was the smallest Kelim clear existed in Beis Mikdash is not plausible. A Tefach is not that small, right? We're talking about this. Feel it in my fist. It's like this. This is a Tefach. And maybe a little bit smaller. I have relatively large hands. But, like, basically, this is a Tefach. Right? So, you're telling me that was the smallest Kli in the Beis Mikdash? Why don't we learn from the actual Kelim, and then we can get smaller Kli? Right? Doesn't that make sense? And then you'd know Darren was actually less than 10 Tefachim tall. That would be the implication of that suggestion. So, Morris just no Tefasta Meruba Tefasta. Tefasta Meruba Loi Tefasta. Tefasta Muat. Tefasta. Basically, the idea is as follows. You want to... You don't want to... How do you explain Tefasta Meruba Loi Tefasta? Tefasta Muat Tefasta. In Rashi explains it. It's a little bit like when you get to tell a lie, right? So you can tell a big lie or you can tell a small lie. If you tell a very small lie, that might get passed. People might not notice. If you tell a humongous, whopping lie, then the chances that people are going to believe you are relatively low.
Not according to Goebbels.
I'm sorry?
Not according to Goebbels.
Goebbels.
What specific comment of Goebbels are you referring to?
He had some statement saying if you tell a small lie, nobody will believe you. But if you say an absolutely absurd, massive lie, then no one will question.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I'll find the quote and I'll show it to you.
Cool. But common sense dictates that this is true, right? The bigger your lie is, the more people are likely, to realize that it's nonsense, right? So basically, the idea is similar here. If you want to, compare the shulchan to something, to something that's relatively similar to. You don't want to make a ridiculous comparison. Comparing it to like the frying pans, for example, that we're going to fly them, is a little bit far. Comparing it to shulchan makes some sense. They're both large solid objects that were in the heichal itself, etc. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then the Gemara suggests for Nilaf Mitzitz. Why can't you learn from Tzitz? The Tzitz of the Kohen Gadol.
Well, surely the same thing with a prong.
Okay. So what's the Tzitz?
It's the thing that
what was written there? It's the most holy part of the Godim, the Kohen Gadol, right? And has the Shem and Mefurash on it. So it makes some sense to compare it to the Aron HaKodesh, right? No?
Yeah, in terms of holiness, but not in terms of structure.
Okay, but it's like still, like, you know, comparing to the Aron HaKodesh makes some sense. Right, so it says, we'll learn it from Tzitz. Tzanias, it says, Tzitz doime kemin tashelzav. Tzitz was like a basket of gold. Veroichav shtei etzbois, and it was only two etzbois. It was this wide. Two fingers. Right? And it ran all the way from one ear to the other. Lost my place. There we go. The Chosav Alav Shtei Shitin, and it was written in two lines. This is the Machlokes Tanoim. Yud Kei Milamayla, right? So the Shem Hashem was above. The Kodesh Lamed Milamata, and Kodesh La was below. So parenthetically, there is a discussion in Tosis here. What does it mean? They give two options for what that means. What does it mean that the Kodesh La was on the lower line? The Tzitz is Kodesh L'Shem. That's what the pasuk says it should say, right? Kodesh L'Shem, but it uses Shem and Farish. So what does it mean, Kodesh La, and then Hashem on the upper line? Right, so Tosis say, their first suggestion there, maybe what it means is it's literally two lines. Like, you write something in two lines. So the top line said Hashem, and then the bottom line said Kodesh La. And the Tosis then say, no, that makes no sense, because you can't read it in a normal fashion then. Right? So what they assume that it means is that Kodesh La is just... Kodesh Lashem is written from right to left, as you'd expect. But the words Kodesh La are a little bit lower, and Hashem is just written a little bit higher. And that's what it means by two separate lines. Also, parenthetically, and since I'll mention this, since this is very halach lamaisa, again, this is the thesis on this stuff. This stuff is very rich. Yud ke, right? I said yud ke, I didn't say yud, and then hey. Why? So, we have a rule that kol ha, anybody who spells out the Shem Hashem, the Zunisidoraisa. You're not allowed to say the name, the Shem of Farish, and you're not allowed to spell it out. It's a Farish Gemara in Sanhedrin. Right, so that's why you've probably heard people say Yud K Vav K. Right, they won't spell it out. They won't actually say the correct letters. Why? Because you're not allowed to say that name. You're not allowed to spell it out. So Tosfos here assume that that applies to this shortened version of the same name as well. Yud, and then Hey, is not the full name, although the one that appeared on this was the full name. Even so, you are not allowed to actually spell it out according to Tosfos. Which is interesting because you are allowed to say it. Right, but they say you shouldn't spell it out. At least you shouldn't spell it out outside of the context of tefillah and things like that. You shouldn't say it. And the reason why I say this is so... Firstly, just keep in mind this when you're saying various shemes to avoid actually saying them, because this applies to other shemes as well. One should try to avoid saying shemes if it's not in the correct context. But second, and we really pass in that way, but we pass in that it applies to shemes in, for example, English. So many Acharonim say that you should not say G-O-D, you should not say that word, you should say gosh or something. If it's not in, you know, the correct context of davening and things like that.
What about discussion?
Sashem.
It's said correctly. Like, you know, like if you said with Kedusha Tara, it's probably okay. But like, as in, this is a... okay, fine. Okay, let's continue. The quote is like that. The Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yosi, Ani Reisiv Baromi, and he said, I saw it in Rome. The Chasuv Alav Kodesh Lashem Beshitach. And he said, I saw it, and it was actually written in one line, not in two lines. Right? Meaning it wasn't either in two completely separate lines or with Kodesh La a little bit lower. It was just in one line. How does the Rambam Paskin on that issue? Two separate lines or one line?
One line.
Why?
Because he saw it.
So the Rambam Paskin is two lines. And the Kesef Mishnah asks, but wait, didn't Rabbi Yosi come and say he saw it? So if he saw it, what does that mean? It's like, we've resolved the Machlekes. We know exactly what they did in the time of the Mikdash. So Kesef Mishnah answers, no. There's a Machlekes in the time of the Mikdash as well. That Kohen Gadol Paskin, it should be on one line. But a Rambam thought, Paskin like all the other Kohanim Gadolim who probably thought it should be on two lines. After all, they would make a different sits for every single Kohen Gadol.
Really?
Yeah, it has to fit. Everybody has a different size head.
So what would they do with the old sits?
Magneto.
Oh wow.
Okay. Danin kleim ikleiv ein danin kleim itachshet. So what's the reason why you can't learn from tzitz to the width of the kaparos? Because we learn a kli from a kli, we don't learn a kli from basically jewelry. Is a translation tachshet. Right? The tzitz doesn't serve any purpose in the, you know, sense of being useful outside of the context of being mashir avoda. Right? It doesn't have an actual use. That's not, you know, just the kohen gadol wearing it for the purposes of being mashir avoda, and therefore it is. And therefore, it's not as close to the Aron. Benelif Mizar de Amar Mar. Oh, sorry. Benelif is Zer. You should learn from the Zer. What's the Zer? Sorry?
Okay.
So the Zer is also like a crown, says Rashi, that was around the Mizbeach. Around the Mizbeach. Apnimi Asisa Lo Zer Zahav Saviv, says the Pasuk, right? Vizer ma'zer ma'de'amra ma'zer mashu, and zer is not a tefach, it is mashu, it's very, very, very small. Right, so maybe you should learn the width of the kaporos to be like the zer, and it's very, very thin.
What's the difference between zer and misgeret?
The misgeret is what's around the shulchan,
I know, but if you can't learn it from the misgeret, why would you even think to compare it to the zer?
Saying, why are you choosing to learn it from the misgeret instead of from the zer? Like, you're saying we learn from the Mizgeres, which is a tefach.
But didn't we reject learning it from...
We've been accepting learning from the Mizgeres, right? And the Mizgeres is a tefach. So saying if you can learn it from the Mizgeres, you can also learn it from the Zer. Why not learn it from the Zer? And the Zer is much thinner. It's a mashu. Right? It's very thin. Okay. Danin kli mi kliva. In danin kli mi hechsher kli. No, so we learn, he says you should learn the kli from an actual kli. And not from a hechsher kli, from something that's that has its entire purpose to make something else to something else functional. What does that mean? The zer is just to beautify the mizbeach. The mizbeach to beautify the aron. The aron also had a zer. Right? The kaporis itself had a zer on it. Right? So the zer is just to make it more beautiful. It doesn't exist for any other purpose. Mizgeres does serve a purpose. It actually holds stuff in. Right? Turns it into a kli. So it says, then the Gemara says, response, Yachi mizgeres nami klechsher kli. Who isn't the mizgeres also a hechsher kli? Isn't the mizgeres also basically for the purpose of decoration? And why? Miskarto lemata haya, because we, Paskin, the mizgeres was below the Teya Shulchan, not above. Remember I referenced this just recently? If it was below, it's not really useful. So Sanichland Aram is got Lamata Hisa, Laman de Mamma is got Lamala Hisa, Michael Mirror. Hi Hechsher Klihu. So it says it makes sense to say that we'll learn from the Misgeris from a Kli to a Kli if the Misgeris was above the table. But if the Misgeris was below the table, it's not really a Kli, right? Ella danin davar shenasna b'Torah mida mi davar shenasna b'Torah mida v'al yechiach tzitz v'zer sheloi nasnahem b'Torah mida klal. So it says, no. Rather, you should learn from something which the Torah gave measurements from. The Torah gave measurements for the kaporis. It just left one of those measurements out. For the misgeres, the Torah gave measurements. For the zer, the Torah gave no measurement, which is how we know it doesn't have to be, like, there is no measurement to it, that's whatever you want to make it. Right? So it makes more sense to learn from something that was given a measurement, from something that was given a measurement to something that was given, at least some measurements, than to learn from something that has no measurement, that has no established size, to something which in fact does. Right? So that was the answer. Okay, this is going to continue, but we'll do it already tomorrow because I don't think it'll do. Yeah, it's not going to be super quick, so we'll continue with this tomorrow. Stay, gentlemen.
Wonderful day.